tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 30th of July, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. It's Thursday, which means we will be discussing geopolitics today. And who better to discuss geopolitics with than our resident geopolitics analyst, Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rusjournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
Usually at this point, I say something funny. But I'm not shocked, but I am in wonder about how you have come out of prison on this nonsense charge and you've never been better. It's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful experience. I can't believe it. I didn't know what to expect when you came out and you're more cheerful than before you went in. I don't know what the hell's going on in Gulf's prisons, but it's really a wonderful thing to behold.
Well, I was able to turn it into something of a positive experience. And I will be speaking at the PA conference this year, and that will also be the subject of my speech. So if people want to hear more about that, they can come along to the conference. Or if you can't make it to the conference, they can listen to the recording, as I'm sure there'll be a video recording of it. But yes, I certainly feel better than I was before. A new improved Sven Longshanks, and it's certainly good to be back talking to you on a Thursday, Matt. And today we are going to be talking about one of our most popular subjects, I guess you could call it, and that is Ukraine. I think we were only just talking about Ukraine last week, but we're talking about them today because there's been an escalation in circumstances. Ukraine have actually targeted Iran, an Iranian ship, and we're taking our notes from globalresearch.ca. The recent Ukrainian strike on an Iranian cargo vessel in the Caspian Sea marks a significantly and potentially dangerous escalation in the geopolitical landscape, effectively merging the US proxy war in Eastern Europe with the other ongoing US conflict in the Middle East. This attack, which resulted in the death of a crew member and injured another, was quickly confirmed by Ukrainian officials, who justified it as a legitimate strike on a vessel used for military logistics between Russia and Iran. Ukrainian President Zelensky explained the attack within a broader narrative of an expanding threat, publicly alleging that Russia is providing crucial satellite intelligence to Iran, which Russia denies. And I'm just wondering if what they meant to say there is that Iran was providing crucial satellite intelligence to Russia, which Russia was using it against Ukraine. Because if they're saying here that Russia's providing this intelligence to Iran, I mean, why would they then go and attack Iran unless they're just going out to attack Iran because that's what the Americans are doing? I mean, Matt, what do you make of this? Do you think they've got this the wrong way around?
Yeah, I think this author is a little bit naive, but he was one of the first to write on it. There's no question, nor has there ever been a question, that the two countries share satellite intelligence. But throughout the war, there's been a Chinese ship in the Indian Ocean that's been their main source of that. You know, Iran is connected to the Chinese satellite system. They don't use the Western targeting, so they only use the Chinese version. So the West has nothing to do with it. So I think he's just, this guy seems to be, and I don't think he gets it quite yet. He's heading there, but he doesn't get it yet. Russia doesn't deny it. There's no question that that's been, you know, Russia's been arming Iran for a long time, and since the Chechnya war, and vice versa. There's no question about it. So he may just be just a little bit naive in this regard.
Yeah, it's like, why would that be any of Ukraine's business anyway, if Russia is giving intelligence to Iran? I think this is probably the other way around, and Ukraine have attacked Iran because they think Iran is handing intelligence to Russia, which they're saying Russia is denying. This narrative was leveraged to argue that the conflicts are inextricably linked with the stated goal of necessitating a unified international response against what was described as an axis of aggressors. So this would benefit Zelensky to claim that Russia was working with Iran and then try and get more countries to go against Russia because Russia is helping Iran. So I can see that it would benefit Ukraine to have people think that. The geopolitical calculations behind Kiev's decision are complex, appearing to be a high-stakes gambit aimed at galvanizing its allies and pushing the United States to make its war against a multipolar transition something more explicit. Some analysts posit that the move was designed to curry favor with the United States administration by demonstrating Ukraine's utility as a more aggressive partner, aligning with a strategy to escalate pressure on Iran and Russia simultaneously. Again, what you have is America is trying to get other countries to help out with this attack on Iran, and other countries are refusing to do so, pretty much. Britain is refusing to do so. So perhaps Ukraine is stepping forward and saying, look, all these other countries that are supposed to be your allies, they're not helping you, but here we are. We're going to attack this Iranian ship in the Caspian Sea. We're there backing you up. Therefore, you ought to back us up. And I think that's probably more like what's going on there. Any thoughts on that, Matt?
Well, again, this guy is still kind of a normie writer. Maybe one day he'll get it. But because, you know, he got the scoop, you know, we got to include him. The ship involved was called the Anna. In no way was it ever designed for military or dual use kind of products. What it was carrying was rolled sheet metal. And there was a storm in the Caspian, northern Caspian, and it was at anchor. It was the most peaceful ship you could possibly imagine. The sailor who was killed by shrapnel it was a drone strike. Now, the other reason we know that this guy's kind of a normie is that Ukraine doesn't make decisions by itself. This is all, you know, American weaponry. Now, they may have gone off the reservation in this case, because it seems like Donald Trump is iffy about it. He hasn't really even issued a statement about it. And if that was Zelensky's opinion, it shows us how stupid he is. That would have nothing to do with anything. The ship wasn't sunk. It was a fire, and that was about it. So it meant nothing. It was maybe was a way to show off the fact that, you know, Ukraine has long range, can hit anybody. But remember, you know, this is a Jewish oligarch that runs Kiev. I should also note that the Caspian used to be called the Khazar Sea many centuries ago. It was one of the central bodies of water for the Khazar Empire. And Zelensky, you know, said he wanted to make Ukraine into a big Israel. And I talk about that in my book in great length. So it might be currying favor with Tel Aviv more than anything else. So it was an incredibly stupid thing to do. The damage was minimal. It was a peaceful ship. You could look it up. There wasn't even dual-use stuff on it. It was very heavy, but they didn't even sink it. I don't even think they tried to sink it. But Ukraine's been, you know, with American permission, of course, has been just pure terrorism since they've lost this war. Just attacking civilian everything, and now a civilian ship. I think it flies under the Gambian flag, which makes me laugh. But this is a sea that has Jewish roots to it. And it's extremely strategic these days. And because of who borders it. But Ukraine certainly doesn't border it. It was an incredibly stupid thing to do. Now, Iran may just do a tit-for-tat, one-on-one, and that'll be the end of it. At first, the Ukrainians said it was unintentional, at least according to the Iranian foreign minister. Now, that's changed. I don't know how you do something like this unintentionally these days. But the initial reports when this first happened a couple days ago was that it was unintentional. But of course now, you know, well, either that or they're just trying to make something out of it. Ukrainian military is, you know, has nothing. And they're on their last legs and they're, you know, trying to show the world that they're still able to do things by attacking a purely civilian ship with rolled sheet metal. That had nothing to do with any military operation whatsoever. And like everything that comes out of Kiev or the American embassy in Ukraine, it's a lie.
I'm surprised they didn't say that it was just a mistake, to be honest. I mean, I don't really know what the point of this is, as I say, apart from making a stand, say, showing how much they support America. I mean, what country did this drone have to fly through in order to hit the ship, do you know? I mean, surely that in itself would be disliked by the country's airspace that the drone flew through. If you're saying that Ukraine doesn't border on the Caspian Sea, I mean, what country did it fly over?
I think it had to have flown over Azerbaijan, who, you know, is connected with Turkey. It's almost a colony of Turkey. And for a while, actually, we talked about this. We thought it was going to be the staging area for an Israeli invasion of Iran, which would be suicidal at any point, especially at this point. And so much of the Azeri military apparatus comes from Turkish-Israeli cooperation. And so that it's conceivable that that's, you know, that was okay. You know, it's just not. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And it may well have been some error. Someone thought they heard, you know, we want to hit this. And then they tried to say, oh, no, we did it on purpose. It was just to, you know, nothing would shock me coming out of Ukraine. They may have gone off the reservation, especially since, you know, Donald Trump has been really iffy about responding to this. So it is it was an incredibly stupid thing to do.
What about if it was fired from a ship? I mean, does Ukraine have a navy? Does it have battleships in the Caspian Sea? Do you know?
Well, Ukraine doesn't border the Caspian Sea. They certainly do the Black Sea. The Ukrainian navy doesn't exist anymore because that's, you know, the Black Sea, Russian Black Sea fleet is there. And it was so outrageous when the U.S. was financing the creation of the Ukrainian Navy as they're going into intense poverty. That's what what they needed to spend their money on. But no, they don't border the Caspian. So I don't think there's anything left of the Ukrainian Navy. And I say that with all sarcasm. And whatever there was is long gone.
Well, as I say, I'm not surprised Azerbaijan haven't complained about it. Getting back to the notes, conversely, Iranian officials have offered a different interpretation, suggesting that the attack was instigated by Israel to draw Europe directly into the Middle Eastern conflict, thereby broadening the war's front lines. Iran's official reaction has been one of sharp condemnation, summoning Ukraine's charge d'affaires and warning that it reserves the right to take appropriate action to defend its national interests, with some sources indicating that a retaliatory ballistic missile strike against a strategic target in Ukraine is under serious consideration. I don't really get this, that they're blaming Israel for this. I mean, trying to draw Europe into Middle Eastern war. Ukraine isn't a part of Europe. If there had been a Ukrainian ship that had blown up and they said that it was Iran, or a European ship that had blown up and they said it was Iran, then yes, you might say, well, Israel are trying to draw Europe into this war by a false flag attack. But to say that by Ukraine bombing an Iranian ship from a drone, it's trying to draw Europe into the Middle Eastern conflict, I don't understand the logic there. Do you, Matt? Do you understand that?
Well, logic sometimes doesn't play a great role here. Remember, you know, this is coming from, or possibly coming from the U.S., from the American embassy. They construct their enemies. They don't understand them. The point is that any retaliation from Iran to Ukraine would then cause NATO to send missiles to attack Iran. And it doesn't seem that that's, you know, first of all, there's not a whole lot of missiles left. And if that's logic, it's very bad logic. And the Iranian version the Israeli version is very similar. And this is why that there's been no, as of yet, no clear retaliation. And I still think that there are some people in Iran who think this was a mistake, because that was the Ukrainian statement. And even the Iranian foreign minister said as much when this first happened. But then it blew up into this, no pun intended, blew up into this kind of, I think the journalists made more of it than it really was, possibly, which is why nothing has happened yet. And it's very possible that it was an error. But Ukraine can't admit something that outrageous. But I don't think it was, to be honest with you. But it didn't do anything. And Europe doesn't have the weaponry to go against Iran. They have no interest in this. And it wouldn't do what the Kiev regime wants it to do anyway. It just shows you the desperation of that government.
So Israel might well have wanted this to happen because they knew that Iran would have to retaliate. And if Iran retaliated and attacked Ukraine back, then they could say, look, Iran is attacking Europe. Ukraine is by extension a part of Europe. It wants to join the European Union. Therefore, Europe should get involved in this fight against Iran. I mean, that does make sense. Getting back to the notes, the strategic importance of the Caspian Sea as a new front is paramount to understanding the gravity of this incident. The world's largest inland body of water has evolved into a critical economic lifeline for Iran, serving as a vital conduit for trade and essential goods that bypass the heavily contested Strait of Hormuz and the Persian Gulf, which are subject to significant geopolitical pressures and US naval blockades. By striking a vessel in this relatively stable region, Ukraine has directly targeted a key node of Iran's strategic infrastructure, transforming what once were calm waters into an active theatre of operations by violating the security mechanisms that had governed the areas. Now, this is starting to make more and more sense, isn't it? Because if Iran can't get supplies in through the Strait of Hormuz, but it can get supplies in through the Caspian Sea, and Ukraine then starts bombing ships that are going to Iran effectively, it then makes the Caspian Sea unsafe as a route for them to get supplies in. And to be honest, I'm surprised that America hasn't already done something about this. If Iran can get supplies in through the Caspian Sea, you would think that in order for America to put pressure on Iran, they would want to cut that off, since that's what they're doing in the Strait of Hormuz. So I'm surprised that America hasn't already made some attempts at restricting this Caspian Sea route, don't you think, Matt?
Well, as I've said a million times, and people need to get this through their head, Iran is a first world country. They have been for quite a while under the revolutionaries, especially in terms of science and technology. They're closely allied with Russia. Neither Iran nor Russia has any shortage of ammunition, artillery ammunition, but they do cooperate on certain things. And missile technology is one of those things. You know, Iran makes their own missiles based on Russian models. that are considered first rate. So far, nothing more has come from this, saying that a strategic node that's an exaggeration. That it doesn't seem to be the case so far. They attacked one ship that clearly had no military purpose. But it's not a, it is a vital conduit for trade. There's many rivers that the Volga goes right into the Caspian, and there's several rivers that can go right through into the Black Sea and hence the rest of the world. So although it is a lake, a semi-saltwater lake, they do have routes out if necessary. But so far, they've done nothing else since then. And that's what I find interesting. They whatever Ukraine's purpose was, nothing more has happened. The ship, is still saleable. The Anna is I probably could be, maybe it'll be just scrapped. I don't know, but it the Anna is saleable. It was a sitting duck at the time, and if they really were carrying military grade materials, they wouldn't drop anchor. No matter what was going on, they'd keep moving. And the very fact that they dropped anchor and made themselves a sitting duck suggests that this was a huge shock to the sailors aboard. And there has been, there's a Caspian Sea Journal. There's so much work going on here because of the countries that border it. It's very strategic. But there's been no upgrade to this attack. No other ships have been attacked. It has been a lifeline for Iran. So, I just wouldn't go swim in there. That's one thing for sure. It is so badly polluted. And I think maybe they're talking about the possibility of attacking either Iranian or Russian oil. That's what makes it so damn polluted. Rigs through this place. There's many of them. And it's been badly, it's been poisoned. Which is one of the reasons that the Caspian seal, which is hilarious if you've ever seen one, the Caspian seal has become endangered, which is something that Putin has been upset by. But that's easy to fix. But they have not hit any oil structures there whatsoever. They hit a ship carrying rolled sheet metal. That was it.
It really only makes sense if it was an attempt to intimidate civilian ships, say that it's dangerous passing through here. You don't want to pass through here. I mean, really, it just seems that could have been the purpose of this, or perhaps it was an accident. And then they thought, well, we can make use of this accident. We can claim that we did it, and then that will make civilian ships not want to pass through here, perhaps. I mean, it's very strange. The key question emerging from this incident is not just whether Iran will retaliate against Ukraine for a direct attack on its sovereignty and citizens, but how this new dynamic will influence the broader alliance structures and force a re-evaluation of strategic commitments. For Kiev, the gamble may provide a temporary boost in visibility as a frontline state against a perceived common enemy, but it also risks overextending its dwindling military resources. The Caspian strike represents a deliberate attempt to forge a direct linkage between two distinct theatres of war, compelling the international community to confront an expanded axis of adversaries, spanning from Eastern Europe to the Persian Gulf. Iran's invocation of the UN Charter in its protest and in its explicit warning that attacks on its citizens will not go unanswered signal a credible threat of retaliation that could rapidly spiral beyond Ukrainian territory. The response of the United States remains the critical variable, as President Trump's apparent reluctance to endorse Ukraine's narrative of Russian complicity suggests a strategic hesitancy to be drawn into a broader confrontation pitting NATO officially against a coalition of Russia, Iran, and potentially China. I don't think Iran will do anything about this. I mean, you think about all these attacks that Israel did on Iran before this. Think about all Israel's attacks on Syria, and Syria never responded to it. And now you've got Ukraine attacks Iran. It's only the first time that they've done this, whereas Israel, it must have carried out hundreds of attacks on Syria without the Syrians ever responding. And I think Iran wouldn't respond. I think they would see that as taking the bait, effectively, if they were to attack Ukraine, because then you would get all these other countries against them. So I don't think Iran will respond to this. I think they will just complain to the UN, which is effectively what they've done. What do you think, Matt?
Well, yeah, that's complaining to the UN. That's not exactly retaliation. We'll see that in the next article here. I couldn't help but laugh at it. They wouldn't be talking about retaliation. They would have just retaliated, you know, and they wouldn't have involved the UN at all. Since when does the UN matter in these things? The Israelis and their invasion of Lebanon, the last one, there was a terrorist invasion. They simply attacked civilian centers and every UN base in the area, they killed a couple of Indonesian soldiers at one base. That's what they hit. Didn't get very far. That's all that they were doing. So, you know, terrorism has become normalized here. And Trump's, if he's right, President Trump's apparent reluctance, well, that means they did go off the reservation here, which suggests that, well, I even wonder if that's possible, because as of right now, there are no real trained crews that are not under American control to do something like this. I don't think people realize how bad off Kiev is in this department. Just like they don't have a functional economy, they don't have a functional military. They go by, you know, volunteers from the West and mercenaries. The desertion rate is out of control for actual Ukrainians. This is some kind of a symbolic, it may just be a symbolic Jewish notion. Again, as I mentioned, this was the Khazar Lake. That was the name of it many years ago, many centuries ago, during the height of the Khazar Empire. But that's what it used to be called. Since you have, you know, obviously Israel, and then you have a Jewish cult in Kiev, this may be symbolic in that regard. But he says strategic hesitancy. I mean, that makes sense. Yeah. The supplies aren't there. The men aren't there. The money isn't there. Certainly, there's no popular support for any of this. Israel's far worse off physically than we've been led to believe. About 1 million people have left the country. They have their own massive desertion rates. No one's in a position to take Iran on except in these very symbolic ways. Unfortunately, they killed one man in the process.
Yes, that's what makes me think. I mean, Iran would be entitled to get the same back out of Ukraine and attack them, but I don't think they will. The Kiev regime is actively working on a spillover of the NATO-orchestrated Ukrainian conflict into the already highly volatile Middle East, where decades-long American aggression created a state of near-constant chaos, death, and destruction. The Kiev regime's recent attack on Iranian vessels in the Caspian Sea opened a new and dangerous front in the wider confrontation involving the West's proxy wars against the rapidly growing multipolar powers. While NATO certainly cannot beat the combined forces of the actual world, it will still try to undermine its growth and development. The warmongering oligarchies running the most aggressive racketeering cartel in recorded history see terrorism as probably the most useful tool in their overall strategy. It helps maintain so-called plausible deniability, enabling the political West to avoid a direct confrontation that it would undoubtedly lose. This is why the use of proxy puppet regimes such as Kiev is seen as critical. The latest terrorist attack killed one sailor and wounded several others, prompting Iran to conclude that it was a deliberate act. The Kiev regime frontman, Zelensky, tried to justify this state-sponsored terrorism by claiming the vessel was supposedly involved in military cargo shipments. However, Tehran immediately saw through this rather pathetic excuse, with Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi calling it for what it is, a blatant violation of the United Nations Charter. Iran also pledged that the attack won't go unanswered. The resulting tensions have become a geopolitical flashpoint, effectively merging the NATO-orchestrated Ukrainian conflict and the US aggression against Iran. The significance of this terrorist attack is that it reveals the expanding scope of a wider global proxy confrontation. The Kiev regime is no longer acting only as a tool of NATO's terrorism against Russia, as it has now grown to include multiple sovereign powers. Moscow and Tehran already have excellent relations and have supported each other against the West's aggression. They share technologies and other resources that enable both to push back more efficiently. However, this cooperation never involved either side directly, making the latest Ukrainian terrorist attacks unprecedented. They bring Iran directly into the strategic equation, giving it a strong reason to consider retaliation beyond just rhetorical condemnation. Top-ranking Iranian officials have already signaled that any attack carries a massive risk of escalation. This decisive rhetoric suggests that Tehran sees its strategic deterrence at stake. In this context, even a single vessel lost carries implications far beyond the casualty count. Iran has demonstrated time and again that it fears no consequences, as evidenced by its retaliatory strikes on American occupation forces across the Middle East. In fact, the United States has been forced into yet another pause in its aggression, particularly after suffering massive casualties and a loss of assets and military equipment. So he seems to be of the opinion that this is far more important than just this one civilian that's died, and that Iran has to go and attack Ukraine. I just don't think they would do that, though. I appreciate what they're saying here is that Ukraine is now being used to attack Iran, and it could be used to attack other countries that are part of the axis of resistance. And that makes sense as well, that Ukraine is becoming somewhat of a terrorist state, and it's, and the terrorists that work for it could also be used elsewhere in the world. I think that's the point that's being made here. Do you think, Matt?
Well, this author, I trust a lot more than the previous one. This is Drago Bosnich, that I leaned on very heavily when it comes to military equipment for my Ukraine book. But the fact that I couldn't help but laugh. Their response was, it's a blatant violation of the UN Charter. Like, that makes any difference whatsoever. International law, that stuff doesn't mean anything. There's no body to enforce it. It's just rhetorical. And I think he does get a little bit more, a little dramatic when he says that this is now a new front. This ship was not lost. He also says vessels, there's only one. And the U.S. has been very slow to respond. The NATO is such a paper tiger right now. Going up against Russia or even Iran would be incredibly dangerous for it. It just doesn't have the equipment. It doesn't have the men. It doesn't have the money. It doesn't have anything. They were scraping the bottom of the barrel, sending things to Kiev. So sending things to Israel after the Hamas attack, yeah, they have very little left, and they don't have the productive capacity to fix it anytime soon or to supply it, especially when you have Turkey not really wanting to be involved. It was a terror attack, which is nothing new for Ukraine. It's possible that there's an attempt to cozy up to Israel, because Israel's whole policy has been terrorism. How many scientists dealing with people, scientists who've had no training in nuclear weapons, who are even against nuclear weapons, were assassinated over the last 20 years. It's like 25 guys, some of the top nuclear scientists in the world were murdered by Mossad, either in Iraq or in Europe, various conferences and things like that. So this is just another example of this. But to say that their first reaction is to go to the UN just made me smile. Well, who cares what the UN has to say about any of this? Since when has Israel or Ukraine given a damn about what the UN says, or anybody for that matter? But I think this notion that it was carrying military cargo, that was just blurted out later on. There is zero evidence that it was carrying anything other than rolled sheet metal. That's what it had been doing back and forth for some time. You know, it's the Anna. I looked up its ship history. It's been all over the world, and it's always been purely civilian. So there is, you know, that was just, I think that was just something they came up with right on the spot. But terrorism, attacking civilian targets, that's normal now. But, you know, whether they really want to widen this, or whether they just want to send a message, I guess, you know, Zelensky said something along the lines of, you know, Ukraine and Russia have been cooperating militarily. They have been, you know, since the Soviet Union fell apart. And therefore, we have a right to attack anything Iranian, which is, you know, stretches logic to its limit. But he does get a little bit dramatic here. If the Iranians, if their response is to go to the UN, that's not a response. But he is right in saying that it helps maintain plausible deniability, enabling the political West to avoid a direct confrontation. It will undoubtedly lose, because it always loses, and especially now. You compare the axis of resistance, which of course includes, you know, China as well as Iran and Russia, versus the West in terms of military equipment. There is no comparison, not only in quality but certainly in quantity. The West is at critical levels, and so I'm not sure yet. You know, if they went off the reservation, or if this was approved by the U.S., I have to think it was, again, because Ukraine by itself doesn't have the capacity for this kind of thing. Someone went off the reservation here, which is why Trump hasn't said anything. But I think he's being dramatic here. It's not going to merge these unless they keep doing it, which they haven't done.
It could just be that Ukraine is America's proxy against Russia. So I think what the journalist here is saying, he thinks that Ukraine is going to be used as a proxy against Iran. That seems to be the angle that they're going for. The two events, although seemingly unrelated, show just how quickly the two conflicts can move in different directions at once, towards de-escalation in one theatre and retaliation in another. And while Iran has been careful to keep the Hormuz crisis tied to its own strategic interests, Kiev's terrorist attack has undoubtedly broadened the scope of what it sees as vital to its national security interests. The issue is no longer just maritime security in the Persian Gulf, but whether attacks on Iranian vessels and other assets elsewhere should be tolerated or trigger immediate responses. For Tehran, the most immediate concern is whether it should answer directly or in a way that is more limited and asymmetric, but still economically painful for Kiev. Long-range strikes on NATO-occupied Ukraine are certainly within Iranian missile capabilities, making such retaliation more than credible, and meaning that Tehran's warning should certainly be taken very seriously. Missiles such as Gada, Imad, and the more advanced Khorram Shahar series have demonstrated long-range potential and heavier payload options. We were told a while back that Iran had a weapon that could reach Europe, although that's never actually happened. So the idea that they have one which could hit Ukraine, certainly plausible. Such strikes, even as a one-time option, could have devastating short-term consequences for the already battered Kiev, particularly if coordinated with Russia. At this time, it seems highly unlikely that Iran would get involved in anything long term, partially because it would want to avoid giving NATO an excuse to rally around more support for Ukrainian sovereignty, freedom, and democracy. Close quote. This makes a direct confrontation outside of limited strikes far from an optimal solution, both for Tehran and Moscow. A much likelier scenario might be a tit-for-tat response, which includes targeting the Kiev regime's vessels in the Persian Gulf or the Gulf of Oman. This would exploit Kiev's dependence on external shipping routes and deepen the strain already created by the Russian naval blockade in the Black Sea. Such a move would severely undermine the Kiev regime's trade lifelines without producing the same level of escalation risk as a missile barrage. But again, but if they were to attack ships which were supplying Ukraine, I think that would still be seen as an attack on Europe, even more so if they were to attack a civilian ship. So I don't think that's plausible. What are your thoughts, Matt?
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I also agree with Bosnick, where he says that tit-for-tat response, and that'll be the end of it. And when he says Kiev's vessels, that's vessels flying under Ukrainian flag. And, you know, again, it doesn't have much of an economy. And whatever's there is owned by somebody else, most certainly. Any kind of reconstruction is going to be done by, you know, BlackRock, as they've already set this up. And it's going to be totally owned by foreigners. There's no doubt about it. But NATO doesn't have this capacity. And why do they keep acting like, you know, Iran is North Korea? Of course they have missiles like this. They've had missiles like this for a very long time. They have one of the most advanced scientific establishments on the planet. I don't understand this. I don't know just how many times I have to say it to people. Demonstrated long-range potential. Yeah, no kidding. That's been the case for a very long time. These are first-rate weapons, superior to what the West has. They're not using them so far. Just before we went on the air, I made sure that was the case. And I just don't know what more NATO could do, because anything that enters Ukraine at this point just gets vaporized. Especially anything in the air. The U.S. has very, very few options because of the destruction of its military bases throughout the Persian Gulf region, which I talked about for a long time before anyone else. Their radar systems now have to be up in the air, which itself is a problem. And I'll say this again. Russia has the premier military apparatus in the world. Because of its, you know, the fight against Ukraine, all of its kinks have been ironed out. They're battle hardened. They have huge numbers, and it's a very popular war. They want it to end, of course. But because Ukraine is killing civilians, that just makes Putin more popular, and the support for the war more popular. So now you have more volunteers going through basic training. I think more than anything, NATO or Brussels or Washington is embarrassed by this. Remember, you know, Zelensky is a cocaine addict. He has no conception of reality. His military commanders, he just reshuffled. We talked about it. I think we talked about it before. Has a new commander of the ground, commander in chief of the military. Maybe this is his hello to the world. I don't know. I tend to doubt that. It's a very erratic system, if you can even call it a system. And the truth is that NATO is in no position to respond to anything. However, Iran and Russia are in an excellent position, especially given, you know, the Chinese support in satellite support, which has been key to their targeting of, and then more recent Iranian attack on the U.S. base in Jordan. Now, I know the UAE gave the U.S. 48 hours to get the hell out of the country, which I can't blame them. I don't know if they listened. Iraq said the same thing a few years ago. I don't know if they listened there either. But This has been a humiliating defeat for the West. It's conceivable that Kiev wanted to give some white pill to the Western ruling class, that we could still do stuff like this. It hasn't affected shipping. It hasn't affected really anything, which is proven by the fact that the Iranians have done nothing except go to the UN, which, again, I have to laugh. Now, I have a Turkish kitten behind me meowing like the end of the world is coming. I don't know if she's referring to Turkey here in any way. Maybe she is. But Turkey has refused to be a part of anything that the Israelis are a part of. Still have their trade ban on Israel over Gaza. And is very iffy about allowing American bases there to be used. I can't believe that they're even still a part of NATO at this point. Azerbaijan is a sort of mini-me to Turkey. The only difference there is that Azerbaijani, the military apparatus there has a very strong Israeli tinge to it. That was the first war. Keep in mind, the war over Nagorno-Karabakh that destroyed that area, wiped it off the map permanently. It was the first time that drones were used in this military capacity. And Ukraine high commanders were there to watch and to observe. Azerbaijan also has a lot of Russian oil equipment. So this gets very, very complicated. Azerbaijan also borders the Caspian Sea. If anything, this is just a really something that may embarrass most of the powers in the area. And I don't think it's going to go any further than this, but you know, I could be wrong. But I think as of right this minute, Bosnia is just being dramatic about it.
Well, continuing here. However, this doesn't seem to dissuade Kiev from attempting further terrorist attacks and false flag operations elsewhere in the Middle East. Iraq just foiled such operations by the Kiev regime's infamous intelligence services, which now effectively function as terrorists for hire. This extends the same escalation logic into yet another theatre that couldn't possibly be more closely related to Iran's national security interests. The Kiev state agents conducted terrorist attacks and sabotage operations in Iraq while trying to disguise themselves as resistance groups, which fits into their usual pattern used elsewhere around the world, particularly in Africa. Such proxy terrorist activity is virtually guaranteed to be coordinated with the US and the EU-NATO, as the Kiev regime rarely, if ever, acts alone. Now, I'll just point out here as well, they've just had a trial of a man who was working for Ukrainian intelligence that blew up the Nord Stream pipeline, and they're not talking very much about that in the mainstream news. But it's obviously a terrorist attack, and that was carried out by Ukrainian intelligence, an attack against Germany, blowing up this pipeline. And this is the first I've heard of attacks in Iraq. Now you've got this attack on this Iranian vessel. So it does seem as if Ukraine's role is providing terrorists for hire, effectively, for the West. Well, the only logical conclusion is that the political West seeks to ensure trans-regional, if not global, escalation. As previously mentioned, Iran certainly cannot ignore such well-coordinated terrorist activity, particularly as Iraq plays a central role in its stability and national security. The two countries also work closely on maintaining security in Iraq itself, which has suffered tremendously due to multiple American invasions and decades of near-constant bombing and drone attacks. Although we are yet to see formal evidence that the two terrorist attacks are connected, Tehran is left no choice but to interpret both as part of a coordinated effort rather than isolated incidents. It should also be noted that this isn't the first time that the Kiev regime and its NATO overlords are targeting Iran in joint operations. Back in March, the Kiev regime forces were caught red-handed, aiding US aggression against Iran. Worse yet, their covert operatives were also arrested by Delhi's National Investigation Agency during a joint sting operation across several regions in India. So you've got India there, you've got Iraq, and you've got the Caspian Sea, and there's mention of this sort of thing going on in Africa as well. Led by a US operative, they took part in training terrorist groups from Burma. The operation also involved the delivery of drones that would have been used to increase the effectiveness of terrorist attacks. It is virtually impossible to imagine that key BRICS members, including one of the very founders, that's India, being targeted by NATO-run Kiev regime proxies is a pure coincidence. What emerges is a broader strategic image of the borders between multiple NATO-orchestrated wars collapsing, and that the merging of multiple conflicts is the actual goal. And of course, we can add to that this big push to get people to join the army. Adverts aimed at white people instead of aimed at diversity in Britain and in Europe, and also in America, where they're trying to get people to join the army. So, I mean, it could be that they're trying to push these conflicts together, start other conflicts. It certainly seems like they're using Ukraine as terrorists for hire. What are your final thoughts on this, Matt? Had you heard about this attack in Iraq before and this arrest that went on in March in India of Ukraine intelligence services?
Yes. And it comes from Mossad creating a Mossad and CIA creating its own so-called independence movement in a region called Balochistan, which is shared in the southern border of both Pakistan and Iran. And very few people have heard of this. Every once in a while, they blow up a market or something ridiculous like that. It's you know, a terrorist group that wants independence for Balochistan and has zero support locally. And then when you look deeper and deeper and deeper, you realize, okay, this is pure Mossad. It's like ISIS. It's just another concept. And Sistan is another reason where this has been taking place. So all of this comes from that. And, you know, the African case is true. You know, that's all Iran is. Debts paid in blood. That's the title of my book. Ukraine doesn't have any money, so this is how they're paying their massive debt to the West through blood. They're putting in work, so to speak. But you know, the Balochistan movement, every once in a while, will open fire on something. You know, it's a ridiculous thing. It exists only to kill civilians, and it has nothing to do with the people there. That's really what's the origin point here, the nodal point here. And he's right. You know, Kiev does not act alone. And so now they brought Delhi in, of course, Burma, no doubt about that. CIA has been heavily involved in that. I've been talking about that for a long time. But if anything, this shows the weakness of the Kiev system. This is all they're used for. And they go in there with Mossad. They, you know, they work together, possibly Azerbaijan, possibly. And so this is just an extension of that. And now that the war, you know, the war has been over for a long time and Ukrainian military has been just totally destroyed. This is what they have left, just to kill as many Russians and Iranians as possible. That's all they got. And that's why terrorism, actual real terrorism in the true definition of the word, has been normalized. And it happened fairly suddenly. It started in Syria and then it went beyond that. And really no one's talking about it except people like us.
Well, I think we've had guarded references to it. I think when Keir Starmer, when he left, he was saying Ukraine's use is its military and what it has learned in fighting against Russia. And of course, what we're saying is what it's learned in fighting against Russia is using in Burma and India and Iraq in these covert operations with Mossad and the CIA. So it could be that's what Keir Starmer was referring to about Ukraine's use, its military use is useful for Europe and the West. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.